So today we finish up these few sermons in the series, Wise Words from a Friend. Maybe until next summer, we'll dip back in and do a few more as we have been doing the last several years. And if you have been with us, you already know. If you haven't been with us, just a quick reminder that what we're doing is using some devotionals that are in this booklet, Friend to Friend. These were written many, many, many years ago by Reverend Harold Wynn, who was a beloved pastor here at First Friends for about 30 years. And so I've loved digging into these and finding the wisdom that he had to share in his time and seeing how it is still very, very applicable into the world in which we live today. And today, we're going to be talking about learning from roosters. You thought it was impossible, but it's not. We're going to be talking about how we can learn some spiritual insights from the life and times of the average barnyard rooster. And luckily, you don't just have to trust me, you can trust Reverend Wynn, who I think had a lot more experience with barnyard roosters than I do. And this is what he writes in the Friend to Friend booklet, the devotional titled Roosters. It is a rare thing anymore to see a rooster on a farm except on a chicken farm. Several years ago, one could hardly go calling in the country without seeing several proud roosters around the buildings. Old roosters used to get pretty mean and dangerous. That is as far as a child was concerned. Once in a while, an old, mean-tempered rooster would even attack a man, which usually resulted in one kick knocking the rooster several feet, causing a sudden change of attitude on the part of the rooster. Most roosters that attacked or scared boys or girls were inviting themselves to be the center dish for the next Sunday dinner. But roosters are known for their crowing. Someone who edits the Evangel Trumpeter wrote that there are some excellent lessons we can learn from even a lowly old rooster. This is a summary of those lessons. A rooster always rises up early and immediately begins his God-given task of crowing. A rooster never hesitates to use his voice because he can't sing like a canary or some other melodious songbird. A rooster never waits to be praised but always does his crowing whether anyone likes it or not. A rooster awakens not only the hens, but everyone who is in the sound of his crowing. A rooster proclaims the arrival of a new day with its God-given privileges and opportunities. A rooster is dependable and persistent regardless of what those hearing him may want or not want. A rooster never complains, as far as we know, about the common task of just getting everybody awake in the morning. And I suppose if everyone who claims to be a Christian and a member of some church would have these qualities, such a rooster has, more would be happening in the average church. So I was laying out this short series of sermons, dipping back into Wise Words from a Friend, and I was mapping out which devotions I was going to use and then putting it on the calendar. And when I realized that I would be talking about roosters on the same weekend as the Canfield Fair. It's one of those moments when, like, it's this divine thing that happens, that you're talking about roosters the same weekend. So I was at the fair yesterday. I took a picture of said rooster, the mascot or emblem or whatever he is for the Canfield Fair. He was right there over top of me. And here we are talking about, it was just too perfect when I realized how everything would fall into place, roosters this weekend. So I did find it a little disturbing, though, how casually Reverend Wynn talks about eating roosters, which is weird because I eat chicken, like, all the time. And at no point, like, the idea of eating a rooster just feels weird to me. I don't know if it's because of the extra things that are going on the head, which you don't eat anyway, so I don't know why that would bother me. But it was just strange to consider actually eating a rooster. I did a deep dive into whether or not we should eat roosters and if they taste different. And I went on this really crazy sidetrack of the egg industry and the culling of male chickens and male roosters, and they're developing blue light tech. It's a whole thing. And if you want to know more about it, we'll get coffee sometime and we can talk. But that is not what we're going to talk about this morning. But I did find someone who said that compared to a hen, the flavor of a rooster is richer and more intense and sometimes needs cooked more slowly, as the substance can feel tough or stringy. No thank you. I will just eat chickens or steak, either way. So what do we learn from roosters? Reverend Wynn lays out many, many things. So I'm just going to hit on four of the ones I thought were most interesting, most applicable as I was reading over his devotion this week. The first one, he says, is this. A rooster always rises up early and immediately begins his God-given task of crowing. Rising up early. So you don't have to show your hands. If you want to, you don't have to show them very high. But like, how many among us here are morning people? So, okay. So a fair amount. I didn't have to really ask this question at our 8 o'clock service because those people wouldn't be there if they were not morning people. So some of us are. I am categorically not a morning person. That's why yesterday, while I was at the fair, I saw at least two people wearing this t-shirt that I want to share with you because it's lovely. I don't like morning people, or mornings, or people. Some days. I will never understand you morning people. I love you deeply, and I'm so thankful that you love mornings. But I'm not going to, I don't think, maybe, I don't know, maybe when I'm older. So, but we're all familiar with this phrase, right? Early to bed, early to rise makes a man. Yeah. And so, bonus points, do you know who said it? Some of you are mumbling and you know the answer. You just want to say it loudly. Yeah, right. Ben Franklin, 1732. Poor Richard's Almanac came up with the phrase, early to bed, early to rise, makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. And we're all wrong because it's actually the exact phrase is attributed to a guy named John Clark in 1639, almost 100 years before Ben Franklin. And we're wrong again because a very similar phrase is found written by Anthony Fitzherbert in 1532. And then we're wrong again because in 1496 we find it. And actually, if you go all the way back to Aristotle, he says, it is well to be up before daybreak, for such habits contribute to health, wealth, and wisdom. So if you always thought that Ben Franklin came up with that, I am out to ruin your day right off the get-go this morning. So, but it is a very famous phrase, early to bed, early to rise. Makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. And listen, I did find out this week there is some scientific backing to this idea, as much as I hate to admit it. I read that morning people are more persistent, more cooperative, more agreeable, more conscientious, and more proactive in their day-to-day lives. I also read that better sleep can help you more effectively deal with negativity, can reduce your stress, and can set you up for success. I read that early risers procrastinate less than the rest of us. I'm probably never going to find out, but that's what I read. And finally, there was a study from the University of Stockholm that found that those who appear to be tired are also more likely to be perceived as unhealthy and less attractive. Therefore, morning people look better than the rest of us. Congratulations. But I don't actually think this is about being a morning person. I actually think it's much more simple than that. It's about laziness. It is a warning against laziness, or the old-fashioned word for it would be sloth. Sloth being one of the seven deadly sins. I ran across a definition of slothfulness this week that I really, really like. And it's very simple and short. It is a habitual disinclination to exertion. I know a few people like that. A habitual disinclination to exertion. So next time somebody says, you're just lazy. No. I just have a habitual disinclination toward exertion. Now, the interesting thing is that the sin of sloth, we always associate it with physical laziness, not wanting to do anything. But it's true that it's also a mental thing to be mentally slothful, or the big focus actually in church history is on spiritual slothfulness, on not having a consistent exertion in our spiritual lives. Proverbs 23 or 24 talks about what happens when our lives are overcome with laziness or sloth. I went past the field of a sluggard, past the vineyard of someone who has no sense. Thorns had come up everywhere. The ground was covered with weeds and stone wall was in ruins. I applied my heart to what I observed and learned a lesson from what I saw. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a thief and scarcity like an armed man. That word sluggard's pretty intense, right? I mean, you call someone a sluggard and there is no confusion about what you mean. It's every time it's in the Hebrew, nearly every interpretation, every translation is that word, sluggard. Obviously, a connection to the slug itself, that little slimy, creepy, crawly, slow-moving thing. No one wants to be associated with a slug. I learned this week that in 13th century Denmark, they would actually give the surname sluggard to people who were habitually lazy and afflicted with the sin of sloth. So running around Denmark in the early 13th century were people who were simply called sluggard. And you would understand that over time they evolved it and they dropped the L, so it's just sluggard at this point. So what is the result? What is the result of laziness, of sloth, if it creeps into our lives unaccounted for? Well, we learn from the passage we just read, what you've been given becomes overgrown and what you've built falls into disrepair. The vineyard was overgrown, weeds and thorns everywhere. The stone wall had fallen down. The things that were meant to prosper and provide, the things tied to our purpose, were just wasting away. At the time this is written, having a field and a vineyard and a wall, that was probably a livelihood. For at least you, maybe for your family. And just all had fallen into ruin. Fallen into disrepair. Whether it's the things we receive, because the vineyard, yes, needs to be planted and overseen, but those, the grapes that come up, that's a gift. Those are received good things, and they were overgrown. Or the things that we build in this life can just begin to drop into disrepair and to fall over and lose their meaning and their purpose. And then towards the end, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and boom, poverty comes on you like a thief and an armed man. Now, I do have to say this loudly and clearly. This passage is not an indictment of all rest. We need rest. We are designed for rest. And I would argue as often and maybe more often as we fall into laziness and therefore suffer, we actually fall into busyness and therefore suffer. Do not neglect rest. We need it. We are designed for it. But when rest becomes the normative way that we live our lives, that's when problems develop. Poverty comes, a lack of sustained means to purpose. It's interesting to me, it comes like a thief and an armed man, sneakily, stealthily, but also with great strength. That Hebrew word is used a lot of times for a shield. So good luck. Good luck fighting against the instances of laziness and sloth in both physical and spiritual lives if we let it creep into ours. So, lesson one from the roosters. Stop being slothful. Number two, be yourself. Reverend Wynn says it this way, a rooster never hesitates to use his voice because he can't sing like a canary or some other melodious songbird. And this goes with the second half of the first quote, that the rooster is doing his God-given task of crowing. We read about this in Scripture when Paul's talking in 1 Corinthians 12 about the spiritual gifts. He says, if the foot should say, because I'm not a hand, I do not belong to the body, it would not for that reason stop being part of the body. If the ear would say, because I'm not an eye, I don't belong to the body, it would not for that reason stop being part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the sense of hearing be? If the whole body were an ear, where would the sense of smell be? But in fact, God has placed the parts of the body, every one of them, just as he wanted them to be. If all of them were one part, where would the body be? As it is, there are many parts, but one body. The rooster does not try to be anything else other than what he is. No desire that we're aware of to provide milk or wool or to be a beast of burden. Just to do the thing he's been designed to do. And you may say, well, it's such a small thing. It's just a minute and it's over. But think about what a critical role that wake-up call was, especially prior to fancy electronic alarm clocks. The rhythm of life got started. Everything got going in the right direction because that one animal did what that one animal was actually designed to do. Be who you are designed to be. Don't look with jealousy at what other people have or what other people do. Celebrate what they have and do, and ask God, what is it that I am called and gifted to be and to do? And similarly, in Galatians 4, we read very specifically, don't compare yourself with others. Just look at your own work to see if you have done anything to be proud of. You must each accept the responsibilities that are yours. The fact that a rooster's voice is more alarm than song does not cause him to compare himself to others, wanting to be some sort of beautiful songbird. And this simple command that we find here in Galatians 6, it just simply says, don't compare yourselves to others. You guys know how hard that is? That is really, really hard to not compare yourself to others. Do you know how long-standing that struggle is? If you start at the beginning of the Bible, it just takes a few chapters until you get to the story of Cain and Abel. And do you know what happens in that story? One brother compares himself to another. It's just like part of this fallen state. And we live in a world now with social media exposure and airbrushed reality that comparing ourselves to each other is just supercharged to the moon. We don't need help with it, but we are given all sorts of assistance to compare ourselves to others. I read an article this week from a person who has a PhD in neuroscience, and she said, I decided to take just a few months away from social media. Here's one of the things I learned. She said, I would constantly compare my own life with that of others on social media who seem to be having so many more experiences, and of course, ended up being less happy about my own life. Research suggests that social comparison is one of the primary causes of dissatisfaction in people's lives. Stop comparing yourself to others. Know who you are. Be who you are, who God has designed you to be. The third thing we glean from these thoughts on roosters is when Reverend Wynn says, a rooster awakens not only the hens, but everyone who is in the sound of his crowing, dependable and persistent, regardless of what those hearing him may want or not want. I had to look up this week how loud a rooster can actually crow because I had no idea. So, what do you think is the peak decibel range of the average rooster crow? I'll let you think about it for a moment. And you're probably thinking, I don't know how many decibels it is in here right now, so I have no idea what a decibel means. And that's okay. We'll help you get there. But you've had enough time to think. The peak, typically, for a rooster crow, 130 decibels. And you might say, "That what does that mean? I don't know." This is what I found out. It's about as intense as standing about 50 feet away from a jet engine taking off. Pretty loud. In fact, some roosters at the peak of their crowing can be heard from like half a mile away. Super, super loud. Know who you are, live within your gifts, your calling, but do not be surprised if God uses you in surprising ways, unexpected ways that you don't intend but are effective for others. Because when that rooster crows, if his only intent is to wake up all the hens that are nearby, he's doing a lot more than that while also still being who he's called to be. Andy read a moment ago, Ephesians chapter 3, just one verse from there in the message. God can do anything, you know, far more than you could ever imagine or guess or request in your wildest dreams. And he does it not by pushing us around, but by working within us, his spirit deeply and gently within us. Some of the most amazing testimony stories that I get to hear are ones that reveal a positive, unintended outcome of a life that's lived on purpose, with purpose, for Jesus. It's not usually about people setting out to, I'm going to conquer the world and do great things. It's usually people who are just doing what God has designed and called them to do, and it ends up flowing way further out than they ever expected or imagined that it would. And there may be times and places and people who aren't interested in the crowing about the truth that you have to do. I want to encourage you, keep on crowing, not for the sake of instigation or controversy, but because, as Reverend Wynn mentions, the truth is dependable and the truth is persistent. We talked about this a little bit in the series, The Reluctant Witness, and we use this passage from 2 Timothy 4. Preach the word. Be prepared in season and out of season. Correct, rebuke, and encourage with great patience and with careful instruction. Keep crowing. In season, out of season. I love that there's a constant. Keep doing it. But then there's also the flexibility. Sometimes it looks like correction. Sometimes it looks like rebuke. Other times it looks like encouragement. So your crowing doesn't always sound the same in every single situation. But when you have and know and live the truth, keep crowing so that people might hear. And here's the final one. Hope for a new day. Reverend Wynn said, a rooster proclaims the arrival of a new day with its God-given privileges and opportunities. Every morning. Every single day. And I read that and I immediately thought of Lamentations chapter 3. I remember my affliction and my wandering, the bitterness and the gall. I remember them and my soul is downcast within me. Yet I call this to mind and therefore I have. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed. For his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. I say to myself, the Lord is my portion, therefore I will wait for him. The Lord is good to those whose hope is in him, to the one who seeks him. It is good to wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. If you're at all familiar with Lamentations chapter 3, you know that the 18 verses that led up to what I just read, it is grueling. It goes deep, deep, deep into the affliction and bitterness that this author was feeling. All the huge pile, the long list of all the bad things, and it's really intense in the way that it talks about like chomping on gravel. Like there's just an intensity to all of the frustrations and afflictions that were experienced. It's no wonder that it says, my soul was downcast within me. And I want to remind all of us that there are people that you share life with who may be going through some tumultuous times, even if you don't see it on their faces. There's a famous quote that says this simply, be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a hard battle. Maybe you've heard this before, maybe you've seen this online. This phrase, this sentence, this quote gets attributed to everyone from Plato to Robin Williams. There's a huge list of people that supposedly said this. The person who actually said it is Anne McLaren. And the fun part is that's actually a pen name for a guy named John Watson, who was a Scottish minister in the late 19th century. John Watson. That's a boring name, right? It's more interesting to say Plato said this. But actually, John Watson / Ian McLaren reminds us, be kind because the people you meet, it may be just below the surface, it may be way, way down deep. But man, they might be fighting something that you have no idea. And so every day, every morning, is an opportunity to speak into a world that needs the hope that's offered in these verses and Lamentations. For instance, we are not consumed. Maybe just to say, we are still here. Today is a gift of grace. Or his compassions never fail. His faithfulness is great. And maybe sometimes we say, if you're too overwhelmed in your own affliction and bitterness, can you at least trust the stories of others who eventually, as they walked through the darkness, saw the light piercing through? Or maybe simply, as it says in Lamentations 3, seek him and wait. We're going to start next week on an entire sermon series about seeking God. I'm so excited. I'm going to just talk more about that next time. I want to move on to the idea of waiting, because waiting can be the hardest part. And this is what I've grown to appreciate in my own life. Some people just need someone to wait with them in the dark. That's it. They don't need you to fix it. They don't need you to try and explain it or justify it or make it make sense. Some people just need you to sit and wait with them in the dark until the light starts to creep through, and then you can begin to offer some of the hope that we've received that is new every single morning. I was finishing up my notes, and I was just looking at some songs and other things that go to this idea, and I found one. I just started to blare it because it's just so good. It's a song by Christian artist Torrin Wells, and it's Joy in the Morning. And it gets to the bridge of this song, and it simply says this: if it's not good, then he's not done. If it's not good, then he's not done. He's not done with. I'm not going to sing the whole thing, but man, it just, the bridge, it just keeps repeating over and over and over again, and I love that idea. If it's not good, he's not done, because Christ is making all things new in his time. And our privilege is to walk in and share the knowledge of the hope that his mercy and compassion is new, not once a month, not once a year, every morning. Every morning. And if it's not good, then he is not. So a few things to think, reflect on, and pray through this morning as we finish. Is there an area of your life that has become overgrown or broken down because of a consistent lack of engagement on your part, physically, mentally, emotionally, relationally, spiritually? And if so, what is it that is holding you back? Second, in what ways are you most likely to compare yourself to others instead of focusing on the gifts that you have and the tasks that you have been called to? Third, invite the Holy Spirit to gently lead you into more than you expect, ask, or imagine in the upcoming week. And lastly, pray for someone you know who needs hope in the midst of affliction and the strength to wait for the fullness of God's faithfulness to be revealed. I'm going to stop talking for a moment. I'm going to flip through these reflections again. Maybe something just really grabs tightly at your heart or your mind, and you and the Holy Spirit can have a little conversation that gets started now and maybe continues throughout the week. But when that time of silence and reflection is over, we're going to close with a word of prayer and another song.